Welcome to the R7 podcast, sponsored by M is Good. R7 is an innovative, God-inspiring process that explores personal and professional purpose. R7 analyzes seven strategies to transform your vision and find direction in your organizational marketing. R7 establishes clarity and guidance for the gift we call life. Welcome to the R7 podcast. I am back after being out a little bit, getting some rest and recovery. And today I am so excited to bring on John Gallagher to the podcast. John is a mover and shaker, a warrior for the kingdom of God. And John, I'm just like, I don't get around guys like you very often, you know, being, you know, a trusted advisor amongst the most prestigious organizations in the world. And I'm so thankful for you here, for you to be here today. So thank you for joining us.
Dave, I'm pretty jazzed up about being here, and I hope that I can hold up the expectation of that introduction. So we'll see, but I'm looking forward to our conversation for sure.
Yeah, so awesome. So I was on your podcast, and we had a good time. We said, why don't we do this again? And maybe there's a 2 and a 3 or a 3 and a 4 coming out of this. Who knows? But
you never know.
Yeah. If you don't mind, for our audience, just give a little bit of background about yourself, what you've been doing, what you're excited about, how you're impacting the kingdom of God.
Sure. I think we got connected. Ultimately, I started my own consulting and coaching company back 5 years ago, Growing Champions. Prior to that, spent the majority of my career, if you will, inside of organizations focused on the Toyota Production System, lean, continuous improvement. Either on the leadership side, I was a division president for a pump manufacturing company, ultimately moved that into real estate for a little while and some of the things that I was learning, and somehow got called into consulting, which I said I really didn't want to do, in the healthcare space, hospitals and clinics, helping them to improve their operations, efficiency, and how patients flow through their system, you know, utilizing those manufacturing tools, which kind of intrigued me. And when I got started with them back in 2009, I said, I'll do this for a couple of years and get back into operations again on the leadership side. And that was 15 years ago. And I just found that I continued to be pulled back into it and decided to go out and do it on my own 5 years ago. Pretty exciting.
Yeah. And your podcast, you know, is agenda is to grow champions. Tell me about what, in your mind, it means to be a champion.
No, I love that. In terms of, and there was a good deal that went into the naming of the company, Growing Champions. Okay. Two different pieces that come into it to make it a fun story. When I was chatting with my wife, I had been coached by an organization called Building Champions for about 20 years, really. And so it was something that, you know, for me, I had learned a little bit about how they do things and added some of my own opportunities in it. And then my sons at the time were both attending Liberty University, and they were Growing Champions for Christ since 1971. Yeah. And my wife said, why don't you just call it Growing Champions as a company name? I'm like, okay, that's what it is in terms of Growing Champions. But I think about that name, and you mentioned the podcast, the Uncommon Leader podcast, you know, that champion is the one who is ultimately committed and intentional about being successful, regardless of where they get started on their journey. They make a choice, a tough choice, that they want to do something difficult, and they do what they have to do to make that work. And we look at it in the form of success, in the form of six spaces, not just in your vocation, which is one of those that's very important, but also with regards to your faith, fitness or health, which is a big journey that I've been on the last several years, finances, friendships, and fun, you know, those six F's, if you will. And I tease vocation as fruiture, that area of your life that you bear the fruit that you need to, so that you can continue to give back to others. And when a leader can find success in all six of those areas, then they become a champion.
Can you just, for the audience, say those again? It's faith, it's fitness, faith, health,
fitness, two of those, finances, friendships, and fun. And then the sixth one is what I refer, again, your vocation or your fruiture, where you bear fruit. I had to have a play on words to get six F's in there and make your career or your work. So, and again, one of my life verses has been John 15:8 that says, you know, it is to my Father's glory that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. And, you know, that really was the, as I look back, it was about 10 years ago when I opened up my Bible one time randomly and opened up to John 15, which has become one of the my favorite chapters in the Bible. But to bear fruit, you know, God has said that, you know, so many different times in the Bible. I think it's like 209 times the terms bear fruit or fruit appears in the Bible, and that ultimately the work that we do should be bearing fruit. And then if it's not, we need to make changes. We need to have discipline and make changes to get it there and to prioritize and to prune and all those things that we need to do to ultimately complete our calling.
I love that, man. I love that. That's awesome. Out of these six F's, which one do you feel like is the least or the hardest to get or the least fruit you see in you know, leaders?
Well, I think about the F's and what ends up happening. And sometimes I refer to them as juggling these six balls, if you will. Okay. And if, you know, friendships also includes family, as you put it in there, as that's one of those glass balls that you can't drop. And that there's something inside of many leaders, you know, who have not chosen to look at this balanced approach where they'll lean more heavily on their future at this point in time, allowing one of those other balls to drop. And I think the family ball in terms of bearing fruit doesn't come for a while. We just, mm-hmm. you know, my sons are now 28 and 26. And as they're growing as children, I think it's a little bit tougher to see some of the fruit that they're going to bear into the future. We actually just completed our first, what I would call family heritage vision meeting recently, just a couple months back, where we actually identified a formal family vision and mission statement, where we said we wanted to ultimately live in a way that would impact the trajectory of our friend and family for 10 generations to come. And so it takes a while to see some of that fruit inside of the family, but it's those things that you continue to do over and over again that allow that to be grown, allow that to be harvested into the future. And there are times, you know, when you think, times when I thought as kids, my kids were growing up, that I was never going to be a smart parent to them. But to hear some of the things that are coming back as they grow, as they start to go out into the world and have an impact as well, and hear some of those things that, you know, you've taught them over the years start to come to fruition, it's a pretty powerful statement. But I think that one's the toughest one to see the immediate fruit. I can go into fitness and talk about, you know, I can go on a fast for a week and lose 5 pounds and I can see something pretty quickly, but I don't see it that fast when I'm developing my family or developing my relationships.
So it must be easy to change course if you can't see it right away.
Easy is a word that I don't use very often. I might say simple, but certainly not easy. But it's each of those six areas. When I do my coaching, I have individuals give themselves an assessment in each one of those areas. I have them develop a vision for each one of those F's inside mm-hmm. of their life and what it looks like 10, 15, 25 years out. And then I have them ultimately say, what are the disciplines, daily, weekly, or monthly, that I've got to do to bring that vision to fruition over time? Why would I do that so much in my business and not choose to do that in these other important areas of my life? I don't know, but I think, you know, balance is not something that I would say that they all six have to be balanced, because I think we do go through seasons in our life where some may have to be more. But that family ball is a glass ball that you can't find yourself dropping. It's going to break.
A lot of times I've heard the statement, you know, we have to have balanced victory. What would you say about that?
But she's saying a balanced victory?
Balanced victory.
Balanced victory. Okay. If I hear that term, again, what I hear inside of it is that if we're only winning in one of those six areas, frankly, our success is not going to be sustainable, and our impact over our lifetime is not going to leave a legacy or the eternal impact we're looking to leave. And the famous Maya Angelou quote is always, people won't remember what you said. They won't remember what you did. They'll remember how you made them feel.
Yeah.
And that memory of how you made them feel doesn't occur all the time in just finances and your work. It's in other areas of your life that you start to make impact as well. You know, are you serving at church on a regular basis and building relationships and community with those individuals in home groups? Are you narrowing your friendships down to just two or three key friendships in your life that you know if you had to call them at 2:30 in the morning, that they'd be there for you in a heartbeat. And so that, you know, that balanced victory, I don't think that's a bad thing, other than to say you have to recognize that all six of those areas are important. We've used a spider web to teach what that looks like in terms of the score. And you'd love to see that spider web, you know, grow out in all areas the same way, but it doesn't always do that. It's something that, again, you might be growing more in one area of your life than you are and then another.
I love these six areas, and I think that it gives clarity and direction when you're working with somebody and you get a score and go, wow, if I'm really, truly honest with myself here and I'm transparent and authentic, you know, this is where I'm lacking. And
absolutely,
that's probably a great place to launch from.
Well, I'd love to just ask the question off of those of what if, you know, what if you just increased that score by one point inside of that assessment? What would that look like for you and the power that it has? It creates tremendous insight.
That's awesome. Yeah. So let's talk, you mentioned servant leadership. Talk to the audience, because that's not a popular, I think servant leadership was popular probably 10 years ago. It's not real popular right now. So talk to the audience about what servant leadership is in your mind.
Yeah, I think of that, and it's, well, whether it's servant or am I serving, that's one of the things that I look for big in terms of kingdom impact. Again, going back to scripture, and that's something in my journey, in my faith journey, really over the last 4 or 5 years, that's grown dramatically. But I look back and look at kingdom impact, how we can have kingdom impact. And 1 Peter 4 talks about this, that we need to love each other, we need to offer hospitality, and we need to use the gifts that we've been given. He talks about those three things specifically if we're going to be successful, if you will, in God's eyes and making those things happen. And so, you know, I just, again, put something on the front of that and ask, you know, each of the leaders that I work with, how do you love your family? How do you love those that you work with? How do you offer hospitality? And how do you use the gifts that you've been given? You know, we're all given a different set of gifts, but we're also all called to use them to His glory and to make that work. And so if I can understand how I'm using my gifts in each of those three areas, then I would suggest that that would be a pretty good measure of servant leadership. Mm.
Yeah. I was actually explaining this to my staff, see what you think of this, probably about 2 weeks ago. I was saying, you know, before, this is when I recognized it or when I heard about it, doesn't mean that this was the absolute when it happened, but before social media came in and you and I lived in that world, you know, it was very much top down. You had the founder, the P, the VP, the EVP, the managers, and the employees, and they would just dictate down with SOPs, standing operating procedures, and you would just do. And then what I saw was social media turned the whole triangle upside down, because now everybody was accessible and servant leadership had a vacuum to grow. And so in my mind, servant leadership is the leader saying, how can I serve you? How can I help you become the best version of yourself? It's not what I need you to do. It's how do we pull out your gifts to glorify the Lord with your talents and your abilities in this particular job? I want to serve you. Totally, totally different.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And again, I think those successful leaders that lead there, they first make that decision. They have to develop themselves. And if they don't take care of themselves, they don't develop themselves as leaders, they can try to develop others on side of the inside of the team. But once they've made that decision, they're committed to their own personal growth. Then they can recognize that they're no longer the lid, as John Maxwell would talk about, the law of the lid. They're no longer the lid to the organization, and they can equip, they can inspire, they can encourage, which are really the three verbs that I use for growing champions, those on their team to go farther than they would go on their own. Absolutely.
Yeah. When you're serving other people, man, it becomes an empowerment and not, I mean, to me, this is my 24th year of building M is Good. And I think the first 10 years, it had to be all about me. And, you know, and the only way it gets done is if I'm in the room, and I've so let go of that. And so I have so much more peace, you know, for my life when I have the group saying, okay, this is how we're going to move. Now there's some executive decisions we have to make every now and then, but for the most part, I want to empower my people, man. I want to let them go and get out of their way.
I'm not the interviewer because I want to ask you a question on that one. But I
go ahead.
No, I mean, as you say that, in terms of, as you say, those first 10 years, you know, you were, it was all about you, and then it switched. Was there a catalyst for you? Was there a moment? Was there a an aha moment or an awareness that said, I can't do this on my own?
Well, I knew I wanted to grow my business, but I was getting stuck on how much I could stay up late and think and change. And I realized that I just have to empower my clients and empower my employees, and not have groupthink, but like just get out of my own way. And I still struggle with it. And now when I coach other executives, I think we talked about this on the first podcast when we were, is your flap, your fear, loss, anger, pride. It gets in the way. You know, that's what I was going to ask you, is what gets in the way of allowing yourself to serve, even in your, you know, your six F's, you know, like how, you know, I would say that it comes back to your insecurity. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think insecurity can be a big one. And for me, that's something I have had to own over a long time. I think it's limiting beliefs that exist in terms of stories from childhood that continue to be there, that those voices in my head that say, no, you're not going to be able to do that. And it's not that it's a challenge necessarily, but it's a time when I would hold myself small inside of that space and not rely on God to make that happen. Because I know that's not God talking to me when he's even talking to me about my past. And so those shadows, if you will, that exist, you know, you touch on them as flap and you're four. Ambition is one of those things that gets in the way of being successful and developing others. You touched on a little bit. Hey, if I'm going to be successful and it's going to be my company, then I'm going to, you know, grow fast. And I find mine, I turn around and I can't see nothing but smoke. I'm not taking anybody else with me on that journey. I mean, it's just me. And so you touched on this because you mentioned the SOPs as well. I believe to have kingdom impact, and this is something that I teach at a very high level to business leaders and certainly kingdom business leaders with regards to those who want to have kingdom impact, is that developing self and developing team, those two things have to happen first for the structures and processes, which is really the third step, development of structures and processes. For them to stay in place, you got to have a team that can carry those things out, that can continuously improve those things as well. And then once you have all three of those sticks moving together, self-development, team development, and structure and process improvement, now you can have sustainable, elevated kingdom impact going forward, sustainable business impact. You know, some people will define it as profitability, but some people will define, you know, you need to make money as a business. And sometimes we see things a little bit opposite, as kingdom impact means it's not okay to talk about profit. That's just not true. But if you're going to make a kingdom impact, you've got to run a successful company. Absolutely.
I want to go back to something you said here, that this hit, that what you said this a couple minutes ago, and just hit me, man, because I was in a meeting last week and a client brought this up. And I just want to, before I tell the story, I want to hear what you think about it. When you said you hold yourself small, what does that mean?
Well, it means ultimately, again, these limiting beliefs end up me listening to voice that says, I can't. Look, you mentioned this early on about the Spartan race and doing something hard. I go back to a story, and one, you know, I have been asked a question on the podcast, what's your most embarrassing moment? And that moment came to me in the form of shame. I was at an event with other division presidents, and we were doing kind of the, you know, the team building stuff, like falling off the ladder and having your players catch you, or you had the rope that you're walking across. And one of the obstacles that we were going on was a rock wall climb. And we were all in line getting ready to each do a try. I mean, they harnessed us in, they put the, it wasn't a true rock wall. It was just a wooden wall with the fabricated pegs on there. But I found myself working my way back in the line strategically and said, you know, if I kind of walk back, kind of talk to people and let myself walk back in the line, maybe I won't have to do this out of fear and, or out of embarrassment, whatever that is. And I won, I was successful. by the time they got to me in the line, or before they got to me, the time was up for that exercise. I didn't have to climb that rock wall anymore. And I tell you, I carried that around for a long time, not realizing how much it was impacting me until somebody said, let's do something hard. And I came up with, hey, why don't we try a Spartan race? And that took me back to that moment. I'm like, God, no, that's going to be too hard. Mm. But let me tell you, I had three other guys around me that said, hey, if you guys are in it with me, I'm going there. So to have other people, back to one of those F's of friendships and family, there to support you and lift you up, I think that's the part. If I rely on my own, I'm not going to go there. Much like that, back in that point in time, I didn't have God in my life to say, God, help me through this. Give me the strength. I know I can't get injured. You're with me. Help me to overcome this fear that I have, which wasn't really about fear of falling on the wall. It was about fear of not being able to conquer the wall and the embarrassment of having that happen. So that holding myself small is that I found myself at times walking back in the line, metaphorically, if you will, mm-hmm. to not have to try something. And that's taken me a while to overcome that shadow, that shame that existed inside of that, and kind of give that back and say, I'm not going to worry about that anymore. Look, I'm getting older. I'm not young. I think about older than you, Dave. And there are things that I shouldn't try just for the sake of trying. Don't get me wrong. But there are things inside of business or inside of relationships, or, you know, asking to be on other people's podcasts, that I'm not going to let that hold me back, holding small. Last thing, I know I'm rambling on this one, but it's important to me, is it reminds me of the Coach Carter movie, and the guy that talks about is, what is your biggest fear? And the biggest fear that we often have is defined, and I don't remember who the quote was attributed to, was not that we would fail, but that we would actually win. And we would not be ready to stand and recognize that in the moment and say, I won. And I had somebody to help me do that along with me. It's just it's a powerful scene in that movie that I think about all the time. And I think that holding ourselves small is not something that we can do as leaders, especially, and certainly as men of faith, when we go out and try to impact other people.
I know the scene you're talking about in Coach Carter, and I get choked up every time I could see that scene. And totally. Man, it's a powerful scene.
Yep.
What an incredible mindset that you have. I think in awareness of just becoming the best version of yourself and being able to challenge yourself. Like that's awesome, John.
Thank you.
I hope to share that and carry that myself. I've kind of looked at it differently in terms of doing something hard. Every year or every other year, I take on something that I have no business taking on. Like, I'm like, I don't know what this is, but I'm going to go challenge myself. So last year was, I wanted to become a sniper. So I was like, I like guns. I don't really hunt. I have a bunch of guns, but I was like, you know what? Let's take a sniper class. So I got a nice gun. I took a sniper class, and it was like the coolest thing, man. Like learning something new is so much fun. And pushing yourself is pretty cool.
Look, I you mentioned those tears. I mean, I remember, because the thing that scared me the most of the Spartan race was the rope climb. I mean, that was like, I watched people, I'm like, there's no way. There's no way I can climb that rope. And you and I talked about that a bunch.
That's right.
And I remember the first day in the gym that I was able to do that J hook with my feet and just pull myself up and stand up. And I was in our local gym, and I know tears came down my eyes. And I'm like, first of all, you just took one step with it, but it's recognizing that small win. Yeah. Inside of that space. And I remember I was reading a book written by a Navy SEAL, and he talked about change the horizon. Don't worry about the bell at the top. Just take the first step in terms of, you know, celebrating the win so that you can then take the next step. And I thought it was pretty powerful. But I mean, I'm a softie for movies and those kind of things, but the sheer, and pride isn't right. Pride is 10, 15 years ago, John Gallagher, the sheer recognition that I couldn't have got there on my own in that step in time, having people and God there to support me, was what was really cool. So, and it just means, what else is possible? Back to that what if question.
Yeah, it's just so good, man. So last week I was in a meeting and with a client, and he was talking about how, you know, when you see yourself through your own lens, you live in a small room and limited thinking. But when you have God as your source and that there's a bigger plan, the ultimate room is the eternity room, a life in eternity with God. And so it just opens up your perspective on what I'm dealing with here today is just small and petty. Mm-hmm. Whereas God's got a bigger picture for me, and the room has no walls. That's God's unlimited space and time, which we can't understand, but like, it just opens it up. I think it shatters any type of thoughts of like, it's just about me and I have to get it done. But also that depression, that anxiety, that stress, like, God's in control, man. Hmm. Like, if you really do believe that's one thing to say, but if you really do believe it and exercise your faith muscle, it becomes something very real. And the world becomes your oyster.
Oh my gosh. Absolutely. You know, it reminds me a little bit, and I'll just share real quick of a tool. I mean, we've heard of SMART objectives, right? Specific, measurable, yeah. Action-oriented, realistic, time-based. And I went through that and I started talking about kingdom impact. And kingdom impact metrics are not SMART. Those are my Boston friends who would listen to this, and I'll share this episode when it comes out. They're SMART, because I replaced the R with an H. You know, that R with realistic is not how we need to be thinking. Once again, that's kind of holding ourselves small. And it's the H that goes in place of that, to say it like the Boston folks would say, SMART. And that's heaven help us. Like, it's going to take an intervention for me to be able to achieve this. And if we can continue to do that through inspiration, knowing that we may never get there, but it's going to take God's help for us to get there. Now we're starting to think what's possible. Back to that lens. A realistic lens is not what God's asking us for. He didn't call us to, you know, talk to a few people. He said, make disciples of all nations. And he didn't ask us to, he told us to. So we own that responsibility to make that difference. And look, I don't want to claim to be an expert in that space, because I have to pray about it and be in the Word every day to keep my mindset that way. It's not always that simple or easy.
I want to go back to something you said earlier too about the vision weekend you had with your family and setting vision for all six of the F's. Do you feel like, this may be getting a little too personal, but do you feel like you got to a point where it was real and authentic? Were you able to get through that? Because I think, you know, if people are intentional about that, it's so powerful. But if you're just going through the motions because dad says we got to do this, you know.
So I teed it up with a note to him beforehand. Absolutely. Okay. In terms of, it was really, because I think, you know, hey, we're going to do this vision casting meeting and we're going to fly you in and we're going to have this. And they're like, oh God, dad's going to tell us he's going to die or whatever it is. And, or again, we're going to be going through some religious exercise or whatever it is. But really tried to say that, you know, I have a vision for myself to live a certain way. And I don't want to hold that back from you in terms of what that is. I don't want to back to, you know, so that statement about, yeah, dad just wants us to go through this. Did some of that exist? I think there was probably some of that there, absolutely, in terms of understanding it. But I wasn't going to allow myself to walk back in that line further.
That's good. And
say, oh, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to wait. Maybe my time will run out and we won't have to do it. No. If I want to have the impact they want to have, and we developed that vision statement, my wife and I did, and then our sons helped us to improve that statement. But for 10 generations to come, you don't do that by just walking through life and, you know, waiting for the day you retire and wait for the day you pass away after you sit on the beach all the time. You got to be living life in a big way going forward. Now, you know, the thing we did before we left is we scheduled the next one 6 months later. So we're going to do it again.
Powerful, yeah.
In a different place. So that's the key as well. It's like, it's not just a one-time thing. This has got to become part of a discipline as a family that we go through. So we'll take it a little bit deeper next time in terms of defining that. We did vision and core values ultimately. And so then we'll start to define what those behaviors mean for us as a family 2, 3, 4 generations out, when I'm not going to be there anymore. But I certainly hope that they'll carry on. And then, look, my sons will start to, you know, divert as well. One's married and one, you know, certainly is working to be married as well. And they'll set their own family vision and their own core values. But, you know, for the Gallagher heritage to keep going, we've got something that I think can be pretty powerful. And as you said, there's probably a little bit of that, even in me walking back in that line, where in the 4 hours that we really met on it, did we hit it out of the park? No, but we had some great moments. We really did.
I can really resonate with what you did, because I had just done this 3 weeks ago at a golf course, and it became something so special and so intimate. And I just gave without it. Like, I hope this lands. I just gave.
Yep.
And, well, no, like you said, I think having the big picture of, you know, when it lands, that's God's timing. You know,
it's that's like, right.
I feel like it's almost like preaching the gospel. Like, it's not my job to get them saved. Like, I'm just going to preach the gospel and I'm just going to throw it out there. It's God will do the rest, you know?
Absolutely.
So, that's the way I'm looking at it anyway. My boys are 21 and 19. So, a little bit younger.
I'm 28, 26. So I got a few years on you from that space, but either way it goes fast and it doesn't get easier. So you're doing it the right time. 21, 19. If we were supposed to do it earlier, it might've been tough for us teenagers, whatever that is, but regardless of the old, you know, when's the best time to plant a tree? It was 20 years ago. And we know what the second best time is. And that's just to get it going, to get on that rock wall and get going.
That's so good. What do you think are the three essential attributes of being a champion?
Yeah, I appreciate you teeing me up on this question just a little bit to understand that. But, you know, the first word that came to mind for me was intentionality. You know, it's something I teach in terms of the uniqueness of a champion, as they're very intentional. And you have to be in terms of those six F's or whatever those are, with how you invest your time, talent, and resources. So that's one. I think that word intentionality comes into play. But the second and third things I would say is there's a spirit of self-development and continuous growth, okay, as a leader that has to be there. Once you think you're done growing as a leader, you've just begun, okay? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I live in a neighborhood here in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, where, you know, probably 70% of the people around me are retired. And they often say, hey, John, can you play golf? I'm like, hey, I'm not retired. I'm still working. So I can't play golf on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday mornings with you, even though you go all the time. And I'm not judging them by any stretch of imagination. But I would love to be able to impact them in such a way that they also have a spirit of personal growth and who they want to be and getting more involved in their community, more involved in their church. That I don't want to get to that point where I say, I'm checking out, 63 years old, retired. I'm going to play golf every day the rest of my life. That's not what we're called to do. Mm-hmm. And so that spirit of continuous growth, I believe, is another that's very important. And then I think that the third one is ultimately the development of others, to having a spirit that says, I'm not going to hoard that for myself, but I'm going to develop others. I'm going to inspire, encourage, and equip others to be champions as well. So whatever I'm learning, it's not for me to keep. It's for me to give away so that others can, back to that verse 15:8, others can bear fruit. If I'm not bearing fruit, then what am I really doing? I think about the story of the logo of Growing Champions. So it was that tree, that verse that came to mind in terms of bearing fruit as a fruit tree. And so I sent a note to a designer and I said, can you help me with a few logos? I'm thinking of a tree bearing fruit, things like that. And he sends me three trees and I'm like, yeah, none of those are really, you know, grabbing me at all. He says, try this one on. This is a guy from Indonesia. And he sent it to me and I look at it closely. And it's a guy coming out of the water with his arms up and it's leaves around him, around his arms. You know, he's basically being baptized and that he's opening his arms to inspire others to bear fruit and to grow that tree. And I got real uncomfortable. I got to admit, I got real uncomfortable with it. I'm like, I don't know if I'm like that into the John 15:8 in terms of making my logo. And then I sat back and it was like, God told me a voice like, whoa, 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 man. What did you just ask me for? You know, you asked me to bear fruit and now you're going to share with others how to do that. So it's giving, inspiring, encourage, and equipping others on that journey that identify a champion.
On your bullet item number one, the spirit of self-determination, or self-development.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What would you say is the easiest barrier to entry to do that? What would that activity look like?
The easiest, too many times. Let's use an example. If you want to become a reader, and again, back to the horizons, okay, and how that looks like. People say, I'm not a reader, or it takes too much time. I don't have time to read. And I asked them a question. I said, could you read 10 pages a day? Which might take like 8 minutes, you know, depending on the size of the book and the font and all that, you know, 10 minutes a day. Can you give me 10 minutes, 10 pages a day? Like, oh yeah, I can do 10 pages a day. No problem. I said, you realize that most leadership books, personal development books are 220 pages. You give me 10 pages a day, you just read 14 books in a year.
Yeah.
What kind of gift is there for you in terms of an easy entry? Mm-hmm. And so it's starting small. And even if it's not 10 pages a day, give me one page a day. Okay. On the fitness journey, I had this conversation with a guy just 2 weeks ago. He says, I just can't find time to get to the gym. Mm-hmm. I said, really? I said, he's busy. He's in a new role. Back to these six Fs. Okay. I just can't get to the gym, and I have to get to the gym if I'm going to work out. I said, can you stand up for me for just a minute? Give me 10 body weight squats. Okay. Just do 10 body weight squats. And he does them. I said, can you do that for me 5 times a day? Like just stand up in the middle of a meeting, just do 10 body weight squats. So I had, it was so funny. I had a journey with my trainer when I was on my 80-pound weight loss journey about 7-8 years ago now. And my trainer, I had plateaued at about 30 pounds. I said, I'm still doing all the exercise you're telling me. And I'm not losing any weight anymore. She said, oh, you're just about arriving. She said, tell me what you're eating. We started to go through what I had eaten over the last week. And she literally belly laughed on the floor, laughing at me in terms of what I was eating. She said, you now have got to start working on your nutrition to make that happen. She said, but don't try to go on some huge diet that's going to get you there. Okay. Just pick one thing. Like, what do you really have to have that you know isn't really healthy that you eat all the time? I said, I probably eat French fries 5 days a week. She said, stop eating French fries. And that became the hashtag for me. Stop eating French fries. Replace it with eat everything else that you're eating, desserts and all that.
Right.
But just stop eating French fries. And it became, again, that hashtag, stop eating French fries, became powerful to me that the French fries represent all those bad habits that we have that get in our way. The doom scrolling on Instagram, okay? The snooze button on the phone that we hit on a daily basis. All those things that are there. So it's starting small in terms of understanding how you're going to change. Look, the first step, and you talk about it in your R7 as well, really is identifying the destiny. Where do I want to go?
Yeah.
You get a powerful vision of where you want to go, dude, you'll get up and you won't hit that snooze button anymore. So that's a part of it. But the easy barrier to entry is just pick something small that you want to move toward.
So good. So good. I told my boys during this leadership weekend that I had with them, the vision weekend, I said, I brought in a big bag of books and I said, I know how to build a company and have it be successful in 24 years. These are the books that I read. And I said, all leaders are readers, but not all readers are leaders. For you to build a big organization, you're going to have to read. And one of my sons, my oldest one, said, why, when I can just ChatGPT it?
I said, and how do you debate with that? Absolutely. But yeah.
Right. So well, you are technically reading. So there, you're reading the ChatGPT. It's one step at a time, John. One step at a time.
Absolutely. Why are you when I can just gummit? But they gotta be good at writing the prompts in there to make that happen. That's a that's a response I hadn't heard. That's that age group though that'll do that. Absolutely.
Exactly. So that's really cool. I was kind of serving you up a softball there because it is reading. The easiest barrier to entry is to read, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Early on in my career, I didn't like who I was. I played pro hockey and I was like, I just didn't like me. And I had a mentor and he said, listen, man, turn off the TV for the next 2 years. Here's the books you need to read. And I did. I read 24, 26 books. In 2 years, I turned off the TV, man, and it changed my life.
Oh, absolutely.
I always
and whether it's ChatGPT or not, I love the tactile feel of a book, and that's what it takes. Yeah. Sometimes is that mentor. Look, don't get me wrong. The first book, that leadership book that I read, I was 26 years old. It was given to me by a mentor. He said, "I'll walk through every chapter with you," and he did. The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership by John Maxwell, and I was hooked. Mm. I was like, "Wow." I thought I'd stop reading after I got out of college and engineering, and I had committed myself to never reading again. And I'm like, whoa, this stuff is really good. Like, I've never heard this before.
Right.
It's just awesome, powerful. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then to read the Bible for the first time all the way through 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, for the folks that are listening, you too many people say, you know, I should probably read the entire Bible. Yeah, you should. Changed my life 6 years ago as well. Absolutely. It's made such a big difference in my life. It's crazy.
I realized in my hockey career, John, that I wasn't the most talented guy in the ice, right? I didn't have the most skill, but what I did was had the most heart. I just tried to work hard. Mm. And I realized that in business, that you don't have to be the most skilled. You don't have to be the smartest guy in the room. Mm. What you got to be is committed to the process, right? And you got to be able to learn, grow, and change. I think my first business book was Who Moved My Cheese?
Hmm.
And like, talk about a business book. Like, that's a cartoon book, you know? And
that's right.
It's got, I mean, it's so easy.
I read all three books in that series.
Did you?
I mean, Spencer Johnson, old Ken Blanchard, absolutely. Those guys knew it. They sold, I don't know, millions of those things. Yeah.
Yeah. And then How to Win Friends and Influence People. And then Think and Grow Rich.
Carnegie, absolutely.
And all huge. Those, yeah. All right. So let's power this thing down, John. I really enjoyed, like, oh man, I would love to be in a room with you, a leadership room with you sometime. And it's just so natural for you to talk about it because, like, you've lived it, you know. Mm. But you know, for our Christian organizational leaders out there that are listening to this podcast, that either it's either a big organization or small, you know, what is the final word you want to say to them, you know, as they're leading the organizations?
Well, again, as I think about it, and it's something that I've been really the past couple of years really trying to study, is that kingdom impact inside of business. Here's what I do know. Going to church on Sunday is important for all of us. Inside of the churches, we can touch about 1% of the population for Christ, and then they leave. Okay. The workplace affords us the opportunity to hit 99 times what we can do from an influence standpoint with regards to making disciples for Christ. And that doesn't mean all the time that we have to walk around or we say we only hire Christians. That's not what that's all about. Fact is, we need to be in the space of others as well. And you said this earlier on the podcast, that we don't have to change their hearts. Let God do the work on that. Mm-hmm. We just provide an opportunity to live our life in such a way that ultimately we'll hear at the end, well done, good and faithful servant. Back to that First Peter. If we're loving others, and you can measure how you love others at work, if we are showing hospitality and ultimately saying, how many people are we inviting to our homes for dinner on a regular basis? And that feels very basic, but getting an opportunity to chat with them. And are we using the gifts that we've been given to make a bigger impact inside of your organization? I think that the impact in the millions of people for Christ is inside the workplace and can be more impactful than the church. Mm-hmm. I believe that. I don't know where that's going. I get a chance to host Kingdom Business Leadership Summit, where we bring a small group, 25 to 30 business leaders, into a room at one time and talk to them about defining kingdom impact in their organization. It's as simple as something like, do you have a Bible study inside, you know, that people can go to if they want to? And it's as big as saying, how many salvations have been identified in our organization for Christ in the future? Because every one of those that occurs, we know that the devil's losing and God's winning in that case, and he's undefeated. But I think, you know, again, you're probably not going to have those sitting next to your key performance indicators of your business, the sales, the revenue, the profit. But those kingdom performance indicators are a pulse you need to have on your organization to make sure you're ultimately having the impact that you want to have. I think that, once again, back to holding yourself small inside of your workplace, especially if you're the owner of the workplace. Don't walk away from that calling that you've been given to make disciples in your workplace.
So good, man. Thank you so much for being on the podcast, man. I really enjoy talking to you. We have to do this again.
Sure. Super Dave, it's been a blast, and I hope we do. I'll hold you to that. Look, I got a couple guys on mine that have been on there. One's been on there 4 times. Two of them have been on 3 times. And when they get to 5, they get the coat, the 5-timer jacket. I haven't bought the jacket yet, but we got to get them on there so that, you know, they can
it's
have
a spiritual
it.
Coat.
Saturday Night Live. It's a spiritual 5-timer jacket. That's absolutely awesome. That they've been on the show. But I'd love to have you on there again to see how you're continuing to grow. Yeah. That's the question I love to ask them. You know, how have you grown since the last time we talked?
Yes, back
to being intentional about how you grow. You're making a difference, Dave, in what you're doing. Okay. M is good and your organization really powerful with this podcast and what you're trying to do to impact others as well. You're doing good things, man. And I know that that's going to be recognized in the future. So thank you so much for the opportunity to chat with you.
Thanks again for joining us. I want to give special thanks to our sponsor, M is Good. Want to learn more about M is Good? Go to misgood.com. Join us again next week as we continue to uncover the secrets to success with faith-based testimonies and the power of R7. Remember, destiny awaits, but time does not.